Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Buds podcast. This is episode number 34, and my name is Henry. This week, I'm honored to be joined by composer Wilbert Roget II, known partly for his extensive work in video games, including Call of Duty World War II, Mortal Kombat 11, Guild Wars 2, Path of Fire, and many others. Well, it is so nice to meet you, and I've loved these games and this music for a long time, so thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, first of all, how's life?
Yeah. That's like the default answer everyone's giving. No, it's cool. I mean, like, kind of what's going on now is I'm juggling a ton of projects simultaneously, which is cool because it's a lot to, I can switch gears quite quickly, but it's also slightly terrifying. But I am excited, especially I have some unannounced titles in the works that hopefully will be announced soon, so I can finally, after like 2 years, talk about some of the stuff I've been working on.
Sweet, dude. Well, first of all, I guess just jumping in, how did you get started as a composer? Was music something you had always wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go fast.
Oh, no, you got time. You got time, man.
Well, I started playing classical piano, I think, when I was like 4 years old. I started taking lessons. I'm pretty sure that I was a very exceptionally annoying kid. My parents just wanted to get rid of me. They're like, please take this kid, take him. Yeah. And so I started taking piano lessons way, way back when. And, that kind of laid the foundation, obviously. And I didn't really have any interaction with video games until late in middle school, at which point I discovered Mortal Kombat and Final Fantasy. And I think that Final Fantasy VII is the game that sort of told me, like, hey, I want to write video game music.
Right.
So from then, I did a lot of transcription. I mean, like, this was way back in the year 2000, before we even had like MP3s. So right. If you wanted to listen to your favorite tracks from your favorite video game, you had to find the MIDI file that some basement dwelling nerd had transcribed note for note. And I was one of those basement dwelling nerds who got to that point in the game and hit record on the cassette player and took it down note for note in general MIDI.
Yeah. But
that's really what taught me, I think, how to write. It's such a great skill to develop, I would say, transcription, which is unfortunately not a lot of people do it anymore. But yeah. I highly advocate that for anyone learning composition.
Yeah.
But after that, I took on a lot of indie and mod projects, writing original scores for those games throughout high school and college. I went to Yale University for college music degree.
Nice.
And afterwards, I joined the Game Audio Network Guild and started going to Game Developers Conference. And eventually, I got hired to do music editing at LucasArts. And I worked there for about 5 years. Started off as a music editor and eventually taught myself the technical aspects of like music implementation in games. And I sort of tricked my way into writing for Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh, yeah, it's a classic.
As the story goes, I overheard that they needed an extra composer for the Old Republic because of some deadlines getting shifted or whatever. And that very night, I just went home, wrote a demo piece, came back the next day, and kind of forced them to listen to it. And long story short, I ended up writing about an hour of music for the game.
Wow.
That was kind of my first time writing. One of my first times writing for a solid AAA title. And then finally, after LucasArts went down, I kind of went independent and scored Lara Croft, Temple of Osiris, and Guild Wars, and Call of Duty, and Mortal Kombat, and so on.
Yeah. Well, with like a game like the Star Wars: The Old Republic, what is it like doing a game like that? Because obviously, it has such a huge player base, and the world itself within the game is so big. What was it like doing music for a game like that? Because I feel like it was such an open canvas. It could be both exciting, but also a little intimidating.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, so there were five orchestral composers on the project. Mark Griske was the lead composer. He had written Star Wars Force Unleashed and the KOTOR 2, I believe, the Xbox game, the original KOTOR. And then there was Lenny Moore and Gordy Hab and Jesse Harlan and myself. And it was interesting because here's five different composers, right? And it's all getting played by the same orchestras, all the music we were writing. But there were five very different interpretations of Star Wars, very different interpretations of the John Williams Star Wars kind of sound. You had folks like, I think Gordy was probably aiming for the closest, most John Williams-y traditional sound. And then Mark, he kind of has his own more kind of aggressive and he just has such a unique way with harmony. And he's a percussionist himself, so you can hear that kind of rhythmic drive in everything he does.
Right.
And then Lenny is very classical or romantic. It's almost like we've resurrected Beethoven for some of these cues and had him write for a video game. And it's like, okay, back to sleep. You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jesse and I, we were the in-house LucasArts composers. So we almost were like kind of an amalgam of all of the above to kind of pull everything together. Back then I had a lot of like Teru Takemitsu influence in my writing and orchestration. Yeah. And so that definitely made its way in. It was interesting because it's a very diverse soundtrack. I think a ridiculous amount of music in that game. And the nice thing about Star Wars is that there's so much Star Wars music now that John Williams has written. It's almost impossible to find something that he hasn't done.
Right. So
the canvas is quite large. There's very few rules out there as far as Star Wars music goes. So in a way, it wasn't perhaps as intimidating as you might think. And we had such a great team. You know, we were recording in Bratislava and, of course, at Skywalker Sound. And we had great orchestration, mix engineer, conductor. Everything was like as good as it gets. So I wasn't terribly worried that it would, you know, sound bad. And of course, like the other composers are all legends. So
yeah.
If I snuck in with some crappy music, then no one would notice because so right. Yeah, it wasn't quite as intimidating as perhaps you might think.
Yeah. Sure. Now, it's just a kind of a quick curiosity. Do you, with project to project, are you always recording at different places or does it often kind of fall in a few big studios?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. It depends a lot on the publisher and what relationships they have and where they want to go. I have some say in things, but realistically, I have no say. Unless it's like my own money, then I can do whatever I want.
Right.
But, you know, for Call of Duty and Destiny 2 and something else I'm forgetting right now, we recorded in Nashville, and that was an
incredible
experience. The group there is fantastic. They're phenomenal players, amazing sight readers, and you know, working with Alan Umstead, who's their contractor, and their conductor is David Shipps, and he also did orchestration for us on both Destiny and Call of Duty. And yeah, I love going there. The food is amazing. It's like, it's so great. And the, you know, every section sounds brilliant there. And it was such a great opportunity going back for a second time when we were doing Destiny and we'd already done two different sessions of Call of Duty. And, you know, seeing like familiar faces and friendly, you know, all kinds of photos we're taking together and stuff, you know, it was so great. And,
yeah.
We've also recorded a lot at Skywalker, especially for the Star Wars scores. I believe Force Unleashed 1 and 2 were recorded there, and half of the Old Republic was recorded there as well. London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road as well. I recorded my Star Wars First Assault score there, which was like 70 different dreams come true all at the same time. It was like,
yeah, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, you know, the game was never released, but it was still just such an amazing experience working with these players at such a great studio. And for Mortal Kombat, we recorded in Budapest. It was part of like a Dynamedian. Dynamedian's a German company, but they run the recording sessions there. And they sounded amazing as well. You know, Call of Duty Mobile we did in Vienna, and you can see the video of that recording online. You can see that they were also just phenomenal players. And I feel so lucky that like I've been able to work with so many great orchestras, you know, throughout the world, because they've all just been so fantastic.
Yeah. And not only the musicians, but is it important for you to, or I guess more so, do you oftentimes coordinate with like the game developers in terms of what sounds, or are you kind of off on your own in your own corner?
Oh yeah, no, there's lots of back and forth. I mean, generally speaking, what a lot of studios like to do is long before they even think about recording with the orchestra, they want to hear what's called mock-ups, where you're doing like a synthesizer sort of preview of what it's going to sound like if you're when you're recording with the live orchestra, so that they can review it and give their suggestions and, you know, revisions and kind of that whole revision cycle and iteration, right, and whatnot. Sometimes they'll even put music into the game just so that they can hear it in context. And obviously the quality is not as good as like a real orchestra, but it's good to have it as close as possible, so that they can get a good sense of how it's going to sound. And once you have that, then eventually once things get approved, then you orchestrate and you know, do the parts and everything goes to the actual orchestra. But there is quite a lot of back and forth, generally speaking.
Yeah. And now talking about some of the other specific projects, so Mortal Kombat 11, which is the coolest game. I mean, it's what's not to like? What is it like doing music for a game like that? Because it is, of course, a fighting game, and there's a lot of different characters, a lot of different possibilities with, you know, who you're fighting, where you're at. What is it like doing music for a game like that?
Yeah, so the way that worked actually was I was the principal composer, which meant that I did the main themes and all the like menu themes and whatnot. And then the story mode, there's like a 3-hour, there's two different 3-hour campaigns. So it felt like scoring like a movie trilogy. It's just like so much content.
Yeah.
But then we had four composers writing the in-game music. So during the actual fighting. The interactive score. And that's a whole other separate thing that I wasn't really too involved with. But interestingly enough, they actually used some of my themes in their pieces, which is always really cool to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Mortal Kombat's an interesting fighting game in that it's never had character themes. The reason being that the stages are usually based on the story and not on individual characters.
Right.
So like in Street Fighter, for instance, you can say Chun-Li's stage and, you know, a theme will pop up and then you think of that street corner with all the bicycles going and it's okay, it's Chun-Li's stage. But MK never had that. We've always had a huge story, but it's never been about like the one-to-one between story and characters. For who knows what reason, but that's just the way it's done. And so what was interesting is that I was doing this story mode and the characters are at the center. And it's even more complicated because in MK11, you not only have the character in the present day, but you also have their past versions and they're all coming together. Sometimes the two are interacting with each other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes like one is alive, the other's dead, all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And so one of the first decisions I made was this needs to be a leitmotivic game. We need to have themes for every single character, every single faction. They have to have something. If not a theme, then maybe a signature sound or something to identify this, because otherwise the story is just going to be, you know, it's going to be so difficult to put it all together and make it flow naturally. And so, yeah, I mean, it was crazy because, like, you know, Mortal Kombat was such a huge part of my childhood. It was ridiculous. Yeah. I was the biggest nerd, just martial arts geek, fanboy, whatever you want to call it. Watching like, you know, crappy TV shows like WMAC Masters, which is a reference no one gets, but I loved that show to death. And it actually had a lot of actors from the MK movie and the MK games, just like that martial arts actor universe, really legit. I would watch that show religiously. I even watched the MK cartoon, the whole thing, the movie. I was obsessed. And it's so crazy to now, a million years later, be the guy who writes like Kitana's theme, yeah, or, you know, like themes of Raiden's theme, you know, themes of these characters that I've known for like 20 years or however long it is. I mean, I just feel incredibly lucky that I've had that opportunity.
Yeah. With a game like that, that's, you know, has of course just a growing fan base and similar to others as well. Do you find that when you're going in the responsibility, quote unquote, of, you know, I guess loyalty and satisfaction to a fan base is in your mind, or are you kind of zoned out from that? Are you just, this is a project, I'm going to, you know, do my best on it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to give myself credit for maturity because I'm about as immature as possible. Same. You're not seeing like an adorable teddy bear off to the side of the screen, but like I'm about as immature as it gets.
Yeah.
But I don't know, on Mortal Kombat and Call of Duty even, and especially even Star Wars, which is about as big a franchise as it gets, once you kind of get going, you don't really think too much about the pressures of like, oh no, the fans aren't going to like this or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's more, because you know why? I think the reason why is because you're so laser focused on like, I just have to get this cue approved. The audio director and music supervisor, whoever, has to like it.
Right. So
it could be that they're the ones who have to be working, but for me, I'm like, well, you know, I have so much to worry about that it's just pulling that balancing act. I mean, I think the worst it's ever been was with Call of Duty, because, you know, every night I would think like, okay, this is a game that's going to be played by millions of people. And even worse, like the people who came before me writing Call of Duty scores are like literally the biggest names that exist in film. Touring. Sure. It's all the Brian Tylers, Hans Zimmers, Harry Gregson Williams is like Michael Giacchino, like every big name has done a Call of Duty, it seems. And so it's like, why are you hiring this random little black kid from Philadelphia to do this game that's going to be played by millions of, I mean, sure, I'll take it, but
yeah, why not?
Yeah. And so that was very, very intimidating, but, I think it was mostly because of the past composers. It wasn't really as much about the fan base or anything. Because I figured, well, the developers, they've done, what, I think 3 Call of Duty games at that point. So they know what they're doing. I'm not worried so much about that. It's just like carrying on the legacy was, I think, the more concerning thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very difficult to go up against the Hans Zimmers of the world. And actually, you know what? I remember now that you've allowed me to tangent so wildly.
No, please, man. It's all good.
I just remembered that Dunkirk came out at about the same time as Call of Duty World War II.
Yeah.
And it was announced, I think, before, at some time while I was writing. I mean, I actually only had about 5 or 6 months to write that score, which was its own difficulty writing, you know, that much music that was so very carefully revised and you know, so much supervision on that title. But I just remember going to see Dunkirk in theaters the night before the recording session in Nashville and just thinking to myself, why do I hate myself so much that I'm going to force myself to be like disappointed in my own work trying to compare against Honda? But thankfully he did something completely different than what I did on COD, so it wasn't a concern. But still, it was just such an intimidating, you know, going up against that whole Media Ventures remote control family. A lot of the composers from Call of Duty came out of that that studio. And thankfully, they let me kind of do my own thing. They didn't want the electronic synthesis type sound, but they wanted something more traditional. And so I was like, okay, I can do that. Let's try it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Call of Duty World War II, like I personally have such a love of World War II history. So that's kind of a kind of game I cling to. Was it interesting going into that era?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny, like all throughout college, I loved the Michael Giacchino Medal of Honor and Call of Duty scores.
Oh, yeah. They're great.
I think especially Medal of Honor Frontline was my favorite game score, well, Western game score for a long time. And the really funny thing about it was, like, you know, I keep sketchbooks, right? Mm-hmm. And I swear to you, I've written countless dozens of pieces of music and themes and action cues or whatever just sketched on paper just in case I ever get to do a Medal of Honor or Call of Duty game. Just in case. I'm not kidding. I literally did that for years. And you know, once I got this gig and I'm looking at it, it was like, okay, none of this is relevant at all. We're totally doing a completely different thing, much darker, grittier, more heartfelt and realistic. So that was its own thing. But still, it was just so crazy, you know, going back to that era and that style of scoring. I think the funny thing about doing a historical fiction is that you have to kind of keep in mind that this is not any sort of fantasy. I mean, all the things I'd done up until then were fantasy, right? It wasn't anything that actually happened, whereas this is based on things that actually happened. And there's a level of respect and restraint that you need with that before, you know, if you kind of go too far, then it just sounds almost sarcastic and disrespectful. And you need to find ways to make it still have all the emotion that you want, but kind of dance on that line of like, okay, we have to make the characters relatable, but we also have to make this satisfy the needs of a video game. It has to, you know, amp up the action or whatnot. And similarly, the type of story we were telling with Call of Duty World War II was that we wanted the characters to seem real and relatable, as if this could have happened yesterday.
Right.
But at the same time, it was a historical piece. And so it was this extreme tightrope act of, okay, it can't sound too modern, but it also can't sound too historical. What does that translate to in terms of texture, instrumentation, harmony, even melody? How do you work that out? And so that was a big part. I would say that every game has a balance between, like, here's the music direction, and then here is the actual implementation, the writing of the score. And normally it's like, okay, you know, the writing is obviously you have to write 2 hours or whatever. So that's like the hard part. But in this case, I swear it was the direction that was the hardest part. And once that was set, I mean, writing the rest of the score was not easy, of course, but we definitely spent about a month just iterating on the main theme alone. And once we had that, then that was sort of the template of the rest of the score.
Yeah. And I wanted to tell you, because this score, I have the tracks A Long Way from Texas and then Home. I have those in a score playlist of mine that I listen to a lot. And I love them because they, you know, that game, of course, there's a ton of action, but there are tracks like that that are then, they kind of flip a 180 and they're very quiet and very reflective. And it kind of gives you the heart and, you know, and that nice back and forth.
Absolutely. I mean, I was so happy when I saw in my little spreadsheet they gave me, and they allowed me to have some emotion with it. I remember it was at, I think, the second recording session, and the music supervisor had invited his little friend. He's like, hey, come on in. You know, we're doing an orchestra session, Call of Duty, walk in. And we were recording that piece. We were recording Home with the, I think, violin solo or something like that. And oh, no, actually, it was Berga. I think it was Berga with the very simple orchestration and viola solo. One of the two. And I remember him walking in sheepishly and just being like, is this the right session? I thought we were here for Call of Duty. Where's the big Taiko drums? Where's the, you know, what's this violin crap, you know?
Right.
But I mean, it was such a great opportunity. I mean, It's so hard to find spaces like that, especially in modern games where it's all about the slick action and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that makes Call of Duty World War II unique is that because of the setting, we're kind of allowed to explore the emotion a lot more than if it were just some made up story, then it would almost seem kind of cheesy. But like here, it's like, well, this happened. This is a real conflict. so in a way, we're given a little bit more allowance to be earnest. We don't have to be as, you know, we don't have to hold our cards like you normally do in most scoring.
Yeah. And are you, like, with a game like that, are you seeing, like, footage of the game during the process, or is it more so you're, like, away from it and then it's put into the game afterwards?
Yeah. So it's interesting. At the very beginning, I just didn't get anything at all because just Activision takes a little while to set that up. And
right.
Again, we only had however many months for me to score it. Eventually, I would get some gameplay playthroughs of the levels, but that was actually much, much later. It wasn't, you know, I'd pretty much finished like half the score by the time I saw like very much in-game videos that I could, you know, take a look at. I know a lot of people who are more film composers than game composers. They like to see a level and then they literally like score to it as if it were a film. That's never really worked terribly well for me personally because it's not edited like a film. So I don't really understand how that's helpful. But I normally just think more in the perspective of like, well, as a gamer, which I am, what would I like to hear? And I kind of just go from there and write through composed pieces based on that.
Yeah.
One of the interesting ways that that score works out is I didn't write music specifically for levels, but instead it was based on concepts. So the music team would tell me things like, hey, write a piece of action music, you know, this, let's say like medium intensity, and the first half, make it sound like it's urban combat outdoors. And then the second half, make it sound like urban combat indoors, like in a destroyed church or something.
Right.
And so yeah, I would write with that in mind, almost like a through composed it's almost like a like an art music piece or piece of concert music where I'm just like, here's the concept, it's like programmatic, but I'm not necessarily trying to score to any linear picture or anything. It's just like freely write, you know, whatever, for 3 minutes or however many it was.
Yeah.
And once I was finished that and everything was revised and approved and everything, I would deliver it in stems, rather deeply stemmed, meaning that like the strings are on a different file than the brass and the percussion. Everything is like separated up. And the team over at Sony PlayStation, they're the music team for this game. They would then take that and they would be able to edit it to create all of the in-game loops and action music and whatnot. Based off of the stems of this one large cue.
Gotcha.
And that's actually a very efficient way that they do, I think, pretty much all of their scores. So I'm not writing like, here's my Germany Aachen action loop number 3, but instead I'm writing a more conceptual piece. And then they're taking bits and bobs from that to create a whatever they need for in-game.
Yeah. That's cool because, I mean, playing the games, it's always so interesting to think about how did this music get into this scene, you know? And so it's kind of cool to hear it kind of unpacked a little bit. And also one thing I wanted to ask you about is this Vader Immortal.
Oh, yes.
This VR series. What's that all about? Because I feel like that would be really cool to be a part of.
Yeah, it was a really interesting project, which unfortunately I had to do it at the exact same time as Mortal Kombat. In fact, they had the same exact deadline, not that I'm thinking really? About it. The same day, Monday.
Oh man.
I had to turn in both. And it's like, oh great.
Yeah. Cool. Cram time.
Yeah. Oh. But no, it was a really fun one. Like so the way that happened was the audio lead, I guess, or you know, one of the senior audio people on that project was a co-worker of mine back when I worked at LucasArts on Star Wars First Assault. He was our sound designer for that and just one of the most absurdly brilliant sound designers I've ever worked with. It's kind of annoying, but like, it's just so good. It's like,
how good he is, yeah.
It's, oh my gosh. But anyway, so he was put in charge of this game and he reached out to me. He's like, hey, let's meet up GDC, you know, come on over. Game Developers Conference is in San Francisco and so is their office at Lucasfilm. So I just kind of hopped on a taxi and went over and checked out. Well, at the beginning of the week, I had some meetings where the director explained the story to me. And then at the end of the week, I came back to check it out in VR. and it was interesting. I had my first VR freakout. It turns out I can't handle characters in VR. Anything, I can jump off a building, I can do anything with like space, but as soon as any character is within, let's say, 10 feet of me, I completely freak out. So you got to imagine, here's me trying to impress potential clients.
Oh boy.
And yeah. I literally am on the floor. I'm not kidding. You can ask Paul. On the floor, like crying, like, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off. And like a friendly robot companion that came just a little bit too close.
Too close. So
they had to physically remove the VR from, it was awful. But, you know, nonetheless, aside from that, I mean, I saw the project. It was so far ahead of anything that I'd ever seen done in VR before. It was extremely cinematic. I mean, they got, you know, Ben Snow, you know, the best minds at ILM to put this together. And it just turned out incredibly well. It's such a great story. The acting was phenomenal. And, you know, obviously, Kevin and Paul did such a great job with the sound design, and I tried my best with the music. It was an interesting project because the way that I structured it, I said, okay, I want it to sound very much like the films because it's film characters. It's Darth Vader, you know. But because of certain licensing, whatever things, I wasn't allowed to use any of John Williams's musical themes. So I kind of had to write my own take on what a Force theme might be in this context, or what a Imperial theme might be in this context. And then we had the new planet. Well, the planet isn't new, it's Mustafar, but the Korvaxian civilization. So I wanted a theme for that. And, you know, the game took a long time to kind of come together. So I had quite a lengthy gestation period where I didn't really have to write anything. It was just like, well, just think about the game. And I swear, the entire summer and fall, I was just racking my mind about, like, what am I going to do about a theme for this civilization? I don't understand. Like, it's not coming together. Like, the pieces aren't, you know, whatever. Until one day, probably in the shower, it finally clicked. This is a love story. The whole thing is just a love story. And the entire reason why this, I don't want to get too much spoilery, but like something bad happens to the Korvaxian civilization, which is why Mustafar is the planet we know now, this volcanic hellhole.
Yeah.
And the reason that happened, again, was a love story. So I kind of just decided to pivot from trying to do anything epic or even Star Wars-y, and I just wrote a tragic love theme. And that basically is the Korvaxian theme. And then once I had that, all of the pieces came back together.
Gotcha.
Most of the music is still rather strongly rooted in, I think, especially original trilogy sound of John Williams. But as soon as you kind of cross that point in the story to being more about Korvax, then it takes on a new character. There's that sort of flashback scene, and that's like a completely different sound from the rest of the game. But it's based on this theme, and everything kind of revolves around that Korvaxian theme. So yeah, it was a really fun one. And it was actually great because I was doing Mortal Kombat at the same time, it would usually be, okay, Mortal Kombat for the week. And then the weekends, I'll do a little Star Wars, get as far as I can, right, back to MK, Star Wars, MK, Star Wars. And it was a great palate cleanser. I mean, MK was all about, there's orchestra in Mortal Kombat, obviously, but it was more about the synthesizers, the hardware, and the world instruments. And these really gargantuan arrangements that have all of these things playing off of each other. Very complicated production. And then Star Wars was, with some exception with the Korvaxian stuff, it was just the orchestra. So it was like, we can just focus on this. It almost felt like, okay, just relax. Sit back, relax. It's just orchestra. Just have fun. Just, oh, okay. And then back to Mortal Kombat, where I got to figure out how to do all this crazy, ultra modern, you know, slick synthesizer stuff. Yeah, it was a weird one, but I'm very glad that I got the opportunity to work on both projects.
Yeah, for sure. Since you talk about being a gamer, have there been some games, you know, recently that you've been enjoying playing, or have you mostly just been busy with work?
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, my top game this year, coming as no surprise to anyone, is Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Oh, sure.
It was just, I mean, it just felt magical. especially I think towards the middle of the game, you know, you're meeting Aerith and going around with her, and the music is unbelievably cool throughout the whole game, but especially in those like chapter 8 or 9 or something like that. I mean, I was just floored in every single way by that game. The graphics are incredible, the animation, the dialogue, all of the systems. It's just phenomenal from both the creative and technical perspective. Yeah. In ways that I just didn't see it coming. I mean, I played Final Fantasy 15, and I really loved the characters in that one and the open world aspect, but it just seemed like it was its own thing. It didn't, like, it was Final Fantasy, of course, but it seemed like you're doing their own thing. And it never occurred to me that they could ever take that kind of like very modern production and bring it into something like FF7, which is such classic FF, and make it work. I mean, it was the same kind of shock as when I first saw the Avengers movies. And I thought, you know, like, there's no way you can have Captain America and Thor in the same movie.
Yeah.
But it worked somehow. And the Hulk, he's in the same movie too. Somehow it worked. They brought them all together and it worked. It was that same feeling of like, I'm just so impressed that it all came together so well. And then I guess my second favorite this year was Ghosts of Tsushima, which is, it's PlayStation exclusive, and it's set in, I think, pre-feudal Japan. It was during the Mongol invasion. And I, once again, brilliant on both the technical and creative level. I think that it's such a, I mean, the Japanese press is all over it. It's an American game, actually developed right here in Seattle.
Oh, cool.
But, I think Famitsu gave it a perfect score, which I'm not even sure they've ever done for a Western game before. But it was just such a great story. The characters, the music was really well done, recorded in like 3 different continents. I mean, they spared absolutely no expense with that score at all. And just everything about it came together in this brilliant way. Gameplay was fantastic as well. Yeah, I mean, this honestly has been a phenomenal year for games. It needed to be.
Very much so.
Nowhere else to be.
Exactly, dude. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know we could talk for a long time. Is there anything else about, you know, your work that in particular that I haven't brought up that you'd like to bring up? I mean, I know you have some stuff that you can't talk about just yet, but is there anything else in particular you'd like to discuss?
I give this pitch every time because I feel like this game is taking forever to come out, but I'm working on an indie 2.5D Metroidvania title called Anew, The Distant Light.
Nice.
And it's one of the most gorgeous and extremely unique art styles that I've ever worked with. Mm. It's got a great story, but the story is told with no dialogue whatsoever. It's all environmental storytelling. And it's a tiny, like, 2-person dev team. I think they've been working on it since, like, 2014. They hired me right after I did Lara Croft Temple of Osiris. So basically my entire freelance post Lucas career, I've been chipping away at this game. I'm literally today writing the end boss theme, and just to show just how long this project has been going on. But what I love about working on the project is that the art, well, I mean, it's weird to say art director because there's only 2 people working on the whole game, but like, let's say the project lead, he came to me, you know, he said, "Hey, this is the game we're doing. And we don't want the typical video game cinematic Hollywood sound at all." Instead, he showed me all of this 20th century art music, like John Adams and Bartok and Ratavara and Debussy and all of this very modernist concert music, basically. And that was what we're after in terms of the sound. And so I kind of heard that and I was like, okay, well, why did he want that as opposed to a more traditional romantic kind of score? And it occurred to me, this game takes place on an alien planet. You eventually find out that there's already civilization there. And it's almost unrecognizable, but it totally makes sense internally. What better way than to embrace very challenging music of the 20th century, where modernism, the modernist and postmodernist eras, where, yeah, it sounds very weird, but it internally has its own logic that just works. And so that's always been my aesthetic goal with the music. I kind of married that sound with a little bit of Debussy kind of impressionism, and then a lot of like hardware analog synthesizer.
Nice.
With the mentality of, I don't want anything modern synth, but more like vintage, like 1970s, late 70s type synthesis.
Right.
Put that all kind of together and just sort of see what happens. And it's been an amazing, amazing experience so far scoring this. I can't wait for people to play the game because the music is astronomically weird. It's they literally told me just all the stuff that you would never be allowed to write on a AAA game. That's what we want.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, you said that. So here we go. Yeah. You know,
doors are off. Yeah.
Yeah. The gloves definitely came off for the piece I'm writing now. So, we'll see if that all works out.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, Will, man, I mean, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been great talking to you. You're welcome back whenever you'd like. If you got another project coming up, we can, you know, figure something out maybe.
Yeah. If a new ever releases ever, then
yeah.
It's supposed to be this year. I mean, or sometime soon. So we'll see.
But yeah, man, thank you. And, you know, just, you know, please stay safe, you know, take care. And let's hope 2021 is, it goes okay. You know,
this will be our year. Trust us.
Yeah. But,
all right, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. All right, everybody. I think that is about it for the show this week. Please rate, review, subscribe. Thank you so much. Check out themusicbuds.com. And yeah, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we'll see you next time.